Okay, so this way they didn't need to change anything and they complied with the regulations. The problem is, this is the ingredients of the tomatoes. You thought that the filet of fish patty was a little unusual. It has the mechanical characteristics, geometrical characteristics. This means that when you put it in your mouth, it feels like a tomato. Okay. The feel and size and shape, arrangement of the appropriate food particles, and other characteristics relating to sensations of moisture, fat, and oil in the mouth. So they want the flavor, they want the feel and the texture, so you feel like you're eating something that's alive. Now, what the sauce is tomato paste, pizza seasoning, sugar, spices, and you start looking at this and you think, wait, there's no real tomato in here. It's chemicals with textures and vegetables. Okay, so obviously we cannot trust our government to do it. I mean, the meat industry is subsidized by government. Okay, that's why you can go out and buy a hamburger for 69 cents. This is why single parents and people that are on a tight budget, they're buying animal products because vegetables are too expensive. And when you go out there and you can get 49 cents for a liter of high fructose laden corn syrup, and water of the same size costs $3, and you've got six kids with one income, what are you going to do? You got to go to the cheapest. Okay, so this is totally different. Now, high fructose corn syrup, now this was interesting. It was the American Society of Nephrology. It was an exposition in San Diego. What they found was that the high fructose corn syrup consumption, the more it goes up, the higher diabetes rates go up. Okay, and it's not just diabetes. Okay, it's the poison.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show, so I'm going to have to leave that talk there. We've done about 24 minutes of it. We'll play the rest next Tuesday. So we're going to sign off now with some music. But before I do, you just want to remind you, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.3. And you can stream this FM, that is, you can stream this show by going to freakradio.org, that's F-R-E-A-K, radio, all one word, .org, and then when you see the image of the radio tower, press the red button on top, and you're onto the station live. And if you want to access the archives, you go to radioforall.net. And the for all is the numeral four, for all, radioforall.net. And then you put the name of the program into the search box on the right-hand side. And there's three different shows that I'm engaged in. One is Dr. Mike's, M-I-K-E-S, Mike's Health and Wellness. And then there is the other show I have on Monday evening from 6 to 8 is called The Awakening of the Self. So now you have two shows there. And prior to a few weeks ago, I combined both health and spiritual awakening together. And you can access some of those shows by going to Health and The Awakening of the Self. So you have three different titles there. All right, I think that'll be everything right now for till we meet again next Monday, and thanks for being with me. And if I can find a little music, I'll play it. Let's see. I didn't have it lined up for you, so I'm trying to find something right now. Ave Maria by Micah, by Mario Lanza.
manage, by virtue of currents and the topography of the continental shelf, that you manage to come inshore there. And it certainly shows the power of ocean water. One shouldn't actually underestimate the effect of warmer air temperature, at least in the more northerly parts of Antarctica. Warm air temperature and summer melting on the surface of these ice shelves is actually certainly playing a big role in the rather than dramatic disintegration over the matter of a few weeks of a few ice shelves in the Antarctic Peninsula back in the end of the last century.
Well, all along we've talked about West Antarctica and East Antarctica as though they are almost separate parts of the puzzle. Are there any generalizations you can give us about what is happening in these two halves compared to each other?
Yeah, it's interesting that in some ways they do fit being described as if they were two different worlds. The observational evidence we have very little change, maybe some slight overall increase, although this area around the Totten Glacier is one of the hot spots in East Antarctica.
Hey kids, welcome. Long time no see, Santa Cruz. This is Merlin. This is the Idle Hand Show with Merlin and Dolly. Not Dolly, like my Dolly I'm holding in my lap, like Salvador Dolly. Come here, Dolly. Say hi. Say hi to Santa Cruz, Dolly. Which number is that? Which number is it?
Number three.
Well, we're still obviously... Yeah, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Well, we're still obviously learning how to use the equipment here, kids. So bear with us, please. This is the first Idle Hand Show in probably 17 years.
Dolly, you talk,
on the radio.
Oh, yeah, I think you're on there.
Say something.
Hey, oh. 1, 2, 3, 4. You're not seeing me anymore.
Say it again. There you go.
Backwards?
Hey, kids, we're going to try and get some stones. There you go.
You'll see me on the run.
We're going to try and get some stones coming for you, so hang in there tight, kids. We're new DJs like you can be, too. And we do need DJs at 101.3 Freak Radio. So hold on. We got some music coming up. And please bear with me with a little dead air. Not that song, kids. The next one.
Prince of God, the bigger man of faith. Play the game with every blow you bring. Dandelion, don't tell no lies. Dandelion will make you wise. If she laughs or cries, blow away dandelion. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5. Dandelion don't care about the time.
Blow away dandelion. Blow away dandelion. That was Merlin, and a new broadcaster with a new show, and what the heck is the new name? I don't remember it, but you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and my apologies to Merlin. I think I can... No, it hasn't put on the local schedule here yet, but Merlin's an old-time broadcaster with Free Radio, one of the first, and then was with Community TV for quite a while. We interviewed him recently on here, a couple weeks ago with Sandy Lee on the demise or the corruption or the degradation of community TV. But all that, as we get into the show, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Stay tuned for another edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. Today is May 14th, 2015.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. I want a song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
Yeah. And thanks to the Pins and Needles folks for Sing Me a Song. Welcome to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I'm your usual Robert Norris. Phone number here is, as ever, 427-3772 if you want to call in. Area code 831-427-3772. And we will until 8 o'clock, at which point Uncle Dennis will come trooping in with music till 11, plus Earth First updates. And, it's a full evening. I'm assuming he's coming in. I have no special guests this evening, but I've been doing a lot of audio taping. There was a Project Homeless Connect. We've been doing protests to raise people's, let them give an opportunity to express their opinions around the 24-hour parking ban that's being proposed around the homeless lack of services center. Some people might wonder, why are we, doing this? I even got a kind of a chiding from Mayor Don Lane on this, although no new information, which I requested to know whether he supported this ban against homeless parking, and he said nothing. Mike Posner privately has said he didn't like the idea, but he, as far as I know, has said nothing publicly and hasn't responded to any of the email questions that I've written him. And on this issue, which involves, for the first time in Santa Cruz history, turning three streets into complete vehicles banned unless you have a permit to park, 24 hours a day vehicles banned, on Fern, Limekiln, and Coral Streets. Those are the three streets close to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call it, 115 Coral. I've been a critic of many of the policies of the Homeless Services Center and how it seems to be creating more of a prison-like environment, how it seems to be treating homeless people as inmates. And they have the temerity to call themselves a campus. How they harass protesters who are simply trying to, as we were, gather signatures to express the opinions of the clients there that apparently the Homeless Lack of Services Center bosses weren't interested in expressing. And I've heard nothing from the executive director, Janin Thomas, who did send me an email on kind of a secondary subject, our first ever email from her. And I wrote back. She said she'd be happy to meet, and I said, fine, we can meet. But in the meantime, as of Wednesday, the 13th of May, the parking division of the Public Works Department has declared they're going to post signs of no parking 24 hours a day with, a $57 tow-away fine and a $57 fine and a possible tow-away, which, of course, could be hundreds of dollars and result in homeless people losing their vehicles. And it's just generally a cowardly and unwise submission to some activist, one particularly activist business individual. I don't have all the information parsed and ready to provide you today. I may have more on Sunday when I do a show in the morning from 9:30 to 1. But there is a guy called Melrose. And he, since last summer, has been pressing to turn this area into a forbidden zone for homeless vehicles, not because the businesses there need more parking spaces, but simply to drive away homeless people and the possibility that they will assemble, they will camp, that they will engage in illegal behavior without any indication of stats around illegal behavior. And this has been enthusiastically colluded with and endorsed and organized through Ken Deeg, who is a Santa Cruz police officer. And I'm not giving you rumors or she said, he said. These are all in the emails that I've finally been able to squeeze out of the Public Works Department. It took me a couple weeks to get them, and I got them, I think, 2 or 3 days before the deadline. The real information that I kept asking for as well, additional very important information is, will we be able, I think I say because those of you who've been listening understand that this is a question I've raised in the past, will the public, the general public, be able to weigh in on this issue and prevent Public Works from just unilaterally turning what is already a permit parking zone out near Coral Street for 2 hours per day only, and then no parking at night at all unless you have a permit, into a 24-hour ban on parking without permits. And we've gotten contradictory answers from Marlon Granlin, who's the parking department director there, and he has remained utterly silent on it for the last week. He's refused to give a definitive answer, first saying, no, if you send a letter in, we will hold up on this and send it to the Transportation and Public Works Commission, which meets next Monday, incidentally, at 7 o'clock in the City Council chambers, for those who are interested, though there's nothing on their agenda on this issue that I've seen. So apparently it wasn't put on there, at least not as an explicit item. And also, when I tried to get the emails recently of the Transportation and Public Works Commission members, I was told by Filipina Warren, their staff person, that she didn't have that, which shows either gross negligence or simply a tendency to lie to the public, at least to me, because I can't imagine that a staff person doesn't have the emails of the staff that she is supposed to communicate with, assemble an agenda for, and so forth. So I had to put in a Public Records Act request asking for the emails of these folks, and I haven't gotten any response yet. It's been clear from emails that came out, probably inadvertently, from Bren Lehrer, the city administrator, that she actually has advised Marlon Granlin of the permit division of the Public Works not to respond to my questions, that they can delay and stall on these issues. And I've always been a little annoyed with, suspicious of, and not entirely happy with Bren Lehrer. But, you know, we have a somewhat of a working relationship because eventually she is required by law to give out public records, in theory. Of course, the question is that backed up by going to court? And thus far, I've never gone to court to get public records, even though many of them have been denied. I've gotten a lot of them through persistent, repeated requests. But there could be an exception. I'm getting tired, for example, of the police department's refusal to send me information regarding what external contracts and agreements it has with other agencies, state, federal, and other local so-called law enforcement or other agencies in the state. And they keep saying this is not specific enough, and it sounds pretty damn specific to me. I requested that information from first starting in 2010, but then I said, okay, I think make it just give us the last year or two. They're still refusing to do it. So what's needed is to take these issues into court and demand the police department cough up these records, particularly important at a time when people like Freddie Gray are getting shot six times and the officer who did it is getting let off without a trial or a charge, and the DA is refusing to indict. This, of course, is happening all over the country with a few exceptions. I mean, Baltimore was such a hotbed that we at least got, I thought we had some indictments against the six officers. Now, apparently, I'm hearing it isn't sufficient for the DA to say she's charging them. Having charged them, they all are released on bail. But it has to now go to a grand jury. That's what I'm beginning to read in some of the descriptions of what's going on in Baltimore, Maryland. Sorry, I get confused. There's so many deaths all over the country, and they're finally making it into at least the middle sections of the newspapers and somewhat onto the news, sometimes into the headlines, mostly because of the continued protest by people in everywhere but Santa Cruz, of course. Santa Cruz is not everywhere but Santa Cruz, but Santa Cruz is notoriously low-key on these issues. So I will say I did see a show, I haven't reviewed the whole show yet, that Steve Plaich hosted around Black Lives Matter, and Huff is sponsoring a protest this weekend at the Food Not Bombs meal at 4:30 on Saturday with the title Homeless Lives Matter. We've been using that phrase too, because homeless people are often on the front line with respect to police, wherever they are. Police have all kinds of excuses to go after them. And homeless people are under such pressure that they're likely at some point to resist. Homeless people are also, many of them, severely disabled. And some of them are completely fed up. And some of them are prone to expressions of great anger or confusion, as perhaps you and I would be too if we were kept outside for weeks and months on end and treated like criminals and treated like refugees who we don't get any shelter, Project Homeless Connect notwithstanding. So, you know, that's my wrap. I was talking with Kip, an activist who's is on the streets himself and is trying to assemble a resource guide as well as a zine. At least he tells us he's been working on this stuff. And he's also been keeping an eye on harassment around the sidewalks in downtown Santa Cruz, specifically the sidewalk on Elm Street next to the Cafe Pergolesi and across from parking lot number 9, or what some call the Catalyst parking lot, which is a city parking lot. As most of you who listen regularly know, and maybe some of you don't, it's illegal to stand in a parking lot, even if you're non-obstructive, even if you've got a car parked there. It's illegal to sit in your car in a parking lot, any parking lot that is city-run and funded. This was, ironically, you have more rights in private parking lots. They have to actually tell you to leave based on a trespass concern, which doesn't usually happen. But police have been pursuing and driving people away from parking lot number 9. Some have said at the behest of the Pergolesi management. Some have said, no, it has to do with other neighbors. Some have said it's just a police-initiated action. I've gotten kind of mixed, not just mixed reports. I've gotten an unclear picture, having talked to the owner, or the man who says he's the owner of the Pergolesi, Carl, who talks about cases of vandalism and littering and then loitering, which is not a crime. Loitering is also a nasty way of saying people who are assembling that you don't like hanging out. And that's tough shit if they're on the public sidewalk, unless they're refusing to move and blocking the way for other people. And it's my impression that's not the case with the youth and the folks hanging out there, though, you know, you can get it. Some of you can get a hard crowd out there too. It's been said by some. I haven't seen this myself. Maybe occasionally, but the idea of constantly clearing away people and as getting them used to the idea that they have no right to be on the sidewalk unless a police officer says they can is really abusive. And Kip himself got an obstructing the sidewalk citation, which he's asked Councilmember Micah Posner to come to court and at least be in the audience for. Maybe, I'm not sure, he wants him to testify. It hasn't yet hit the court calendar, the court dockets. These citations don't. And, of course, if you make a deal of it, they may just simply dismiss it, or police may choose not to appear, in which case it is automatically dismissed once the case is set for trial if you plead not guilty. So I had a conversation with Kip at the library where we were gathering signatures from people against the 24-hour parking ban, which I guess theoretically is now happening out there unless it has been sent to the Transportation and Public Works Committee and Commission. And if it's been sent there, it probably can't have been sent to the Monday Commission because there doesn't seem to have been time. They would have had to have done it by yesterday, and it would have been on the agenda, and I've checked the agenda, and there's no mention of that issue. So I wrote a letter to Marlon Granlund, who's the head of the parking department, and I advised him that, you know, I got numerous signatures you probably want to see. Here's a list of names of people who oppose this. Please advise us of the status and what item it's going to be on. Where it's going to be on the July agenda. The Transportation and Public Works Commission meets every 2 months. I think it's the third Monday at 7 o'clock. And I suspect they're not going to wait for that meeting. I suspect he is going to go ahead and start posting signs and act as though there is no opposition to this, and act as though his department has the right to suddenly impose a 24-hour ban. He said at one point, or his staff has said, that he can do this unless 2/3 of the businesses in the area object, which, of course, is completely ridiculous. That's actually the basis for which you set up such a parking permit area, is you have to get 2/3 buy-in. Now he's claiming you're going to need 2/3 to stop them from making drastic changes that are far more severely restrictive than were originally proposed. So I'll try to give you an update on that on Sunday. And we will be talking about that. There will be a number of people who are as informed, if not better informed than I, at least one other person, at the Huff get-together, the Homeless Lives Matter get-together on Saturday at the Food Not Bombs meal at 4:30. And you're invited to come on down and check it out and to speak, too, if you've had some experiences about essentially the Homeless Lives Don't Matter perspective of the Santa Cruz, some of the Santa Cruz merchants, the Santa Cruz Police Department's apparent policies, the Santa Cruz City Council's laws, the Parks and Rec Rangers' practices, then come on down and talk about it, because we need to air these things, we need to bring them out, we need to find ways to proceed that involve some kind of solidarity, better communication. And also, though the project has kind of been on hiatus, I am still prepared, once I get some kind of more clearer legal support, and that looks like it may be forthcoming shortly, for the small claims court lawsuits against rangers and cops who give out these sleeping tickets, knowing full well they're going to be dismissed because of either the necessity defense in court, people have no legal place to go, or the actual reading of the municipal code 6.36055, which states if you're on a waiting list for either the River Street Shelter or the Homeless Services Center, the Pauley Loft, actually a section of the Homeless Services Center, then you don't get the court tickets, don't go to court. Of course, we have not been able to get a clear list from the city attorney, though we've requested it multiple times, of how many tickets they're actually sending to court and whose tickets are being sent to court, so that we can judge whether they're following even that law, which itself is ridiculous, considering it's a private organization which somehow has the power to immunize you from citations. But if you are not a part of that group, if they evict you, if they don't like you, if you're engaging in criticism of some of their policies, you can't get this ticket dismissed unless you go through a longer and more extensive process of proving that you had a necessity to sleep, which everyone does, and essentially all you need is a letter that says the shelters were full at that point. They've also adopted a policy of allowing for emergency beds, 6 to 8 emergency beds. This is what I heard from, I don't know if I actually had this interview on tape, but this was one of the folks I talked to at the Project Connect event that happened a couple of days ago. And the statement was that the Pauley Loft reserves places so that people can come in on an emergency basis, 6 or 8 people. And this is you might say, oh, that's great, that's humanitarian. And indeed, you know, it's nice for those 6 or 8 people, if it's in fact an accurate description of what's happening, which it may well be. But the problem is this is the strategy that was used in Miami, Florida, and other places when the courts ruled because there's inadequate shelter, you cannot arrest people for sleeping outside. So what the police would do is they'd run around and they would demand people leave where they were, stop sleeping, or they would ticket them unless they would agree to immediately. They would claim they were open beds at the shelter, meaning they'd always keep 2 or 3 beds open so they could run around and harass whoever they wanted to harass at that night, which, of course, it violates the spirit and the law of the Pottinger decision in Miami, where this was the actual situation. It also violates, here in Santa Cruz, the needs and realities and real situation of homeless people, and also the understandings that even the judges have. Judges are somehow, I think even Commissioner Basket, who I sometimes call Basket Case, because that's, I think, it's a derogatory connotation that indicates that she turns her victims into basket cases, and she treats people essentially as fine-generating machines without any kind of real basic respect for the rights of the people there in terms of the basic constitutional rights. She's quite a friend of the police and can be very nasty to you in the courtroom if you are, you know, if you stand up and stretch, or if you come in the middle of the proceeding, which you have a perfect right to do, or try to leave in the middle of the proceeding. I've been called out a couple of times for walking out. I was had to do something else outside. I'm sure I was going to the bathroom or what. But these are supposed to be public courtrooms, not star chambers. But, of course, there's a darkening process happening all over the country and happening in Santa Cruz as well, is what I found. Although, you know, it's often the squeaky wheel that gets kicked as well as gets the grease. So, anyway, let's hear a bit from Kip. I've talked enough. You're going to hear me talking more on this tape, but we're discussing his thoughts about what's to be done around community issues. He's hoping to get the community together with homeless folks and residents so that they can understand there's a better way to deal with problems if there's congestion on the sidewalk than calling police and security guards or supporting paying police and security guards to, on their own initiative, run out people off from being in public spaces, who are poor and homeless, or are travelers, or are street kids, who are human beings who have a right to use the streets and sidewalks and to hang out on the streets and sidewalks.
What's their motivation in Santa Cruz to do any of this? The businesses and the residents. I'm not going to argue you out of something if you think it might work. Please proceed with it, but I'm just wondering.
A community is always stronger united rather than divided. It's as simple as that. Santa Cruz has been divided in order to be conquered. The residents here, I think, can hold a stake at least with each other. Maybe they've united together in order to get out what they perceive as the problem, which is the homeless presence. I believe that that is a manipulated viewpoint, and it can be re-manipulated.
I welcome such efforts if you can do it. I'm pessimistic.
I don't know if I can.
If you and those who agree with this, I mean, I would try to be supportive, too, of that kind of approach, provided, I guess my thought is that a more militant approach is always, almost always better, unless there's a real opportunity for some kind of mediation. There's no motivation to mediate unless there's power on both sides of an equal nature. And there's simply not the case here in Santa Cruz.
If it's always us versus them, which I believe is what the militant attitude creates, then it's always a cycle of violence, a race to the bottom. I believe in a third option.
It's not created by the militants. It's created by the existing system that exists. That's the problem. It's the militants who are trying to change that system by making it visible. Right now it is invisible to people. They will tell you that police are not being abusive. Or if they are, there must have been some reason why they were. And it's the protests across the country, the militant protests, even the riots that are going on, that have made it really clear that there has to be something done where nothing was done before. Although whether they're going to still do something depends on whether the protests continue, in my view, and continue to strengthen.
The rioters in Baltimore were residents remaining silent in front of tickets until finally push came to shove and Freddie Gray died. And then all they had left to do was rob the liquor store.
That's a stereotype that just simply isn't true. They robbed the CVS. CVS is not a part of the community. You got to listen. You got to go to the.
That was oversimplifying.
Yeah. I mean, and the problem with that kind of oversimplification is exactly what ruling class people use to demonize and dismiss both violent protest and nonviolent protest. Nonviolent protest will lead to violent protest, or nonviolent protest is okay if you go home afterward and do nothing else. You know. But if you are really threatening to come walk into our neighborhoods, you know, and loot our homes because your lives have been looted, you know, then maybe we'll have to start talking about reforming the police department. When we talk about it, maybe we can calm you guys down. See, that's, unfortunately, I'm very cynical. I don't think they want a whole community together, except rhetorically. They want the prior situation, is what most people who are talking this way want. We have another individual who wants to say something, but I'll give you your word here.
Well, my thought on that is, or I had it for a second there in the conversation. You were saying something before you went on that last part.
I'm sorry. When you get it back, here's Doc Mike.
No, I want to make a comment that if you're threatening my income in any way, if I see you as threatening my income from my business or whatever, I'm against you. Even if you're homeless, I'm against you. Put them in jail. Lock them up.
Particularly,
get them out of town.
Particularly if you're homeless, because that's that's become accepted in Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Kip.
Oh yeah, my thought earlier was that the aftermath of these protests are showing a lot of charges against the people for doing the looting, and also just for being present after curfew and stuff like that. And they were held for 49 hours without charge, and that's a crime. They had a state of emergency going on, but a court of appeals might not hold that. Especially if no one was doing any looting. If people were just there and their rights were violated like that and they were held for 49 hours, you could get real reform. You could get a real lawsuit. Instead, all the lawsuits are in the aftermath are going the other direction.
Well, lawsuits take years to go anywhere. And the real issue is if we can get things changed so that somebody doesn't get shot dead tomorrow when a cop decides they're walking too fast while black or while poor or, that sort of thing. So, I'm all for lawsuits.
You say the purpose is to, if you're a radical or a militant protester, is to make the issue visible. So you can do that without looting, having your rights violated, being held for 49 hours, whether it's a state of emergency or not, because you were there for peaceful reasons. And then the problem is really visible. As soon as you start rioting and looting, the people go blind.
I don't know. I mean, I think both activities demonstrate the anger of the people, and I think to criticize either one as a generic, criticism is not a good idea. I think what you really want to criticize is the structure that creates all this stuff. That's where we have to focus our targets, focus our ammunition, focus our weapon.
Absolutely. Violence is the language of the unheard.
For sure. And we've been talking with
Kip.
And talking with
Michael.
Thank you. Hey, no laughing here now. This is downtown area. Today is the 8th, I think. Quick interview for Free Radio, perhaps? About how it happened. We're talking with
Michael.
Michael, you're holding a skateboard and I'm munching a few peanut butter cups, looks like. I'm good. I'm kind of getting a sore throat. Thank you, though. Sleeping ticket, when and how and where and what happened?
It was a couple days ago, and I woke up on the tracks because there's no place to sleep in fucking Santa Cruz. And all the cities were just like, you're trespassing. We're going to throw all your shit away in an hour. Here's your ticket. Have fun.
Like, oh. How many police?
Like two.
And were they city police?
Yeah.
And how long have you been in the Santa Cruz area?
Like 7.5 months or something.
And you're generally outside?
Yes, all the time.
First ticket?
No.
How many sleeping tickets would you estimate you got?
Like 8.
And was it on property where they say no trespassing, or is it just they do it because it's no sleeping?
I think it's on the no trespassing property, but like there's no trespassing property everywhere.
Well, public property is... For example, if you fall asleep on the sidewalk and you're not blocking it off to the side, that's not trespassing, but it's illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock in Santa Cruz.
Exactly. Like, sleeping, on the sidewalk, or in a public area. Public areas aren't fucking private property.
Question is, how many area times were you given tickets in public areas?
4 or 5.
And what's happened to those tickets? You've ignored them, you've eaten them, you wouldn't paid dutifully like a good citizen?
I ignore them, definitely.
And no, the police haven't said, okay, buddy, and they, let's see your ID, you're going to warrant, blah, blah, blah.
No, they did say I am going to get booked in next time they have to talk to me or whatever, or like for a ticket. if they pull me over or something, they're going to be like, we're taking you to booking, and you're going to get your fingerprints done, then we're going to let you go.
What other tickets have you...
And there is actually laws voted in by our current mayor, Don Lane, two of them, which state that even though the sleeping ban, which is you can't sleep after 11 o'clock at night on any public property or even on your own vehicle, even if it's legally parked, that's an infraction. It's supposed to be a fine and with no chance of jail, unless you want to turn your fine into jail time. But Lane and the council majorities 5 or 6 years ago created a city law, which has not been really tested in court. I don't think it's ever been challenged that I've heard, which states that if you get three infractions of any kind and you don't go to court to deal with them, as most people don't who are homeless because they have to sleep every night anyway and they don't have the money to deal with them and they got other things they need to do, go get food, reclaim lost property, or scrounge up enough replacement property. If you don't attend to these tickets, then they can charge a fourth. They can charge a new crime, a misdemeanor failure to pay crime, that in essence subjects you to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. And that's happened to about, I'd say, a dozen people that I've seen documentation on. And I don't know what the disposition of those charges was. I do know that they were charged. That's as far as I've gotten in my record search. I don't know if it's getting more frequent or less frequent. I do know that ticketing for sleeping has gotten a lot more frequent. Sleeping, being in a park after dark, and smoking make up the significant majority of all, overwhelming majority of all citations issued by Parks and Rec. And the majority of those issued by the police department against homeless folks for the last 2-3 years, and it's been escalating based upon a, I don't know, maybe they call it the broken windows theory that has been supposed police policy for a long time, which is you treat a homeless person like a broken window, and you don't want to, you immediately have to correct it. So if a person is not following an absurd law, then you have to punish them or deter them or give their bad behavior a consequence. This is the kind of nonsense that masquerades as law and order talk. It really is, I wish I had the resources to actually research, maybe some point I will or someone will, whether this isn't a, you know, a ploy by real estate folks to, you know, increase the value of their property, or spreading these kinds of fears. Real estate folks have done this traditionally, engaged in profiteering, black scares, and in order to make a lot of money out of real estate speculation. Santa Cruz is a very profitable real estate market. I mean, it certainly is a very expensive one. I can't say, actually, how profitable it is. I don't know. But I suspect it's a very profitable area. And one wonders, since the stats don't show really much meaningful violent crime by homeless people, in spite of the ranting and raging and needle-shaking of Take Back Santa Cruz, it's mostly created crimes that police department initiated laws passed by the city council have branded people as criminals, and then others who are looking, who want to increase police department appropriations can say, hey, you know, look, it's a crime. It's a crime. More people are sleeping. It actually means more police officers are finding the 1,500 to 2,000 people who are sleeping outside because housing's impossible. Rents are impossible. Job opportunities are won't pay for your housing. We all know this, and yet nothing is being done about it except the most drippy-drabby token efforts and this sort of the sunny liberal deal that, oh, see, we're going to create 17 units this year. That's what some guy told me at the Project Homeless Connect. He was working, I think he was a 180 guy. He was very proud that they had housed 17 people or 17 new, they'd created 17 new bits of housing. And that's fine. I don't know how many vacant buildings there are all over the place that should be taxed and, if necessary, confiscated and used for people who are poor and need housing. Or at least significantly taxed with real estate speculation taxes so that there's no longer a benefit in keeping housing off the market or reserving it for upper-class vacation rentals in the summer. That was an issue that hit City Council, I guess, a couple of days ago, which I didn't follow very closely. Let's hear some more from Mike's discussion. And the second law that Lane supported, and I always like to bring up these historical things because they bear on this guy who makes these portentous statements about his wonderful homeless intentions and how homeless people have got to be respected and all this. Then he goes and supports another law which states that if you get every infraction after a third infraction, you get, again, it can be for smoking, it can be for sitting on the sidewalk, it can be for being in a park after dark, it can be for sleeping, will result in all subsequent infractions for the next year being treated as misdemeanors, subject to a $1,000 fine and a year in jail. I don't know how many people this has happened to, but it's on the books, and Mayor Don Lane has voted for it and has expressed, and Mike Posner expressed no opposition to any of this. So, of course, and the majority of the council is just happy with it, happy as pigs and shit. I don't know if pigs are happy and shit. Pigs in mud, perhaps, in hot weather. Hard to say. I don't want to demean pigs by comparing them to city council members. And I say that not just to evoke a laugh, but it's a real statement. I don't think pigs are into oppressing other pigs particularly. But city council members are giving tools to armed gunmen to go around and harass and destroy the rights of poor people in Santa Cruz. And that's a real thing. I think it's time for a musical break. Well, let me just finish this interview and then we'll go musical.
Gotten for other than for sleeping and trespassing or sleeping. I don't know. What other what did you?
No smoking, camping, trespassing.
Not murder, assault, rape, burglary.
Paraphernalia.
Paraphernalia. Ah, so you're one of the evil drug users.
Indeed. Exactly. No. It's just fucking. They illegally searched me, and illegally searched this van, and I got a paraphernalia ticket.
You live in your vehicle?
No. It was my friend's vehicle.
And so what's your feeling about this proposal to ban parking around Coral Street?
That's stupid. I know a really good friend of mine whose vehicle is registered to the Coral Street campus, and he can't park on their street. Like, it is registered to them, and he cannot park anywhere in there.
What does he tell you about the Coral Street procedures for parking on their property?
Nothing. Like, I just recently heard a rumor of, you know, they're going to start doing the permit stuff, but I have no idea.
Are clients usually able to park on the actual property itself? Or do you know?
I have no idea. Like, I don't know who the fuck parks on the property.
I mean, there are some. I was just told by one of the residents who lives there that they're, you know, staff, but also some people who in the Pauley Loft are in the parking there. So I don't know.
It's so broken over there. It's like you can't sleep in your car on lot, or you can't like hang out in your car.
If you
but
want
people
it.
Do it anyway. They're so stupid. And like it's the staff members that fucking do it, and I'm just like, why are they doing this? You know, but they're telling us I can't sleep
no
on
loving
a lot.
Downtown.
I can't come in without an ID, or I'm getting banned for skating away from that area. Like, you know, just skating out of the premises.
Who told you this?
Just experience. Like, I gained my knowledge from firsthand.
I mean, how long ago was this brought to your attention?
Since day one.
And like, have you gotten one of the, you know, ID cards to go through the locked gate?
Yeah, but I destroyed it. And I got a new one, and I destroyed that one, too.
And so what do you do when you want to get it? Do you use their meal services?
Sometimes. Usually, like, you can sneak. There's a way to get in if you don't have an ID. Trust me.
Or you have a secret entrance to the homeless lack of services center.
I don't want to say tunnels, but
oh, perhaps a balloon, a lighter than air approach.
More like teleportation and dematerialization and a bunch of quantum shit.
Gotcha. Morning.
Morning, sir.
Well, Mike, any complaints about security guards around the library or elsewhere?
No. I'm good. I'm all okay.
One just passed by.
Yeah.
And we've been talking with?
Michael.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Should be on Free Radio Sunday morning, I think. And it'll be archived in case you want to hear it later.
And I must say that on Friday, last Friday, when we did this coffee and petitioning outside the main library in the morning, we've been doing this in the past, not around the 24-hour ban on homeless vehicles, but the harassment by security guards, specifically one tall guy called John, who's a security guard there with First Alarm. We called it Big John Watch. And he and his co-workers were initially kind of very, what would I say? The word thuggish comes to mind, but let's say they kind of comported themselves in a swaggering manner. They insisted homeless people move from steps when the library was closed, insisted they move property around when it wasn't in the way, and they were doing a series of things. Now they don't seem to be doing that, at least not when we were there on Friday. And who knows, maybe that our presence there has encouraged them to realize that they are under observation and they have to, keep their dirty underwear a little more out of sight, at least. So you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides. Free Radio is a station that is on the edge, and we need a place to go, both a place to rent for our studio, because our studio is in a house that is being, well, going into new management, and it looks uncertain for us. So if you have a place, a room, I don't know, 15 by 10 or 15 by 6, we can set up in. We'd like to rent it. Secondly, we need a place which we would do away from the room, where we would put our transmitter, which is unlicensed and therefore in the eyes of the federal government illegal, but we've been able to successfully continue to broadcast for 20 years. Sometimes one step. We aren't really ahead of the law. We have to endure their abusive raids. One occasion they took all our equipment. Might have been even two occasions. But not since 2004 has that happened. But we need a place to put up a transmitter. And no matter how many times I say this, I don't seem to get much response. And so enjoy these shows while you can, because they may not be happening for much longer. And, But if you have any ideas, go to freakradio.org. You can also become a subscriber. That's not the right word. I'm thinking of KPFA and Pacifica in the old days. No, you can become an actual member of the collective and run your own show and put out on the air what you think needs to be put out. We're very, I wouldn't say libertarian in our views, but broad selection of stuff you can do. Get in touch if you're interested in becoming a broadcaster and donating and passing on equipment. Freakradio.org is the website to go to. There are also schedules there for programs. Not always accurate schedules, I must say, but some of the programs are. And I think it's worth a look on your part. Freakradio.org.
Never made pie 'cause you didn't have time. Never did fly 'cause you didn't have time. And you never drank rye beer, but never you mind. There'll be plenty of time when you're dead. You'd have traveled to France, but you didn't have time. Sewn red striped pants, but you didn't have time. Watch the birds and the ants, but you didn't have time. But don't worry, there's time when you're dead. When you're dead, you'll never be late for a thing. And you won't have to answer the phone when it rings. You won't mind if nobody posts bail. And you won't have to answer your mail. Well, you but you didn't have time. Swam across lakes, but you didn't have time. I guess those are the breaks, dear, but never you mind. There'll be plenty of time when you're dead. When you're dead, they'll be saying how lovely you were. Though a little too busy, they all will concur. And they'll toast you with glasses of beer. It's a shame you won't be there to hear. Well, you could have skipped rocks, but you didn't have time. Built things with blocks, but you didn't have time. Could have folded your socks, dear, but never you mind. There'll be plenty of time, dear. It all turns out fine, dear. There's plenty of time when you're dead.
Carol Denny, Plenty of Time When You're Dead, from her album Toast to the Union. And, yeah. So, Watsonville has passed an anti-homeless panhandling law, which is almost an exact carbon copy of the Santa Cruz law, including all its ridiculous aspects, which I will, again, hope to bring in on Sunday, unless more immediate events come up. I was able to get the city clerk to advise me finally where it could be found. It wasn't online, but it was passed by the Watsonville City Council. But one council member said no. I guess it was a 5-1 vote or a 6-1 vote, something like that. And I may try to interview him at some point in the future. It's a courageous thing to do against a city council, and I've often encouraged Councilmember Posner to do it, and he usually doesn't. And on some occasions, when he gets a lot of people to come into the council, he does. And even on some occasions when that doesn't happen, he does as well. There has been a preliminary settlement in charges, a lawsuit against the Monterey County Jail, though not any word about actions by the sheriff around the Santa Cruz County Jail. Maybe we can get, I think we may get a Sin Baris activist to talk about that at our protest on Saturday, Homeless Lives Matter. I was trying to find out what is actually being proposed of substance in this preliminary settlement in the Monterey Jail. It's a long legal document. It isn't revealed in the story that is on Santa Cruz Indy Media, although I'm glad that Alex DeRosi, you know, brought my attention to it. And he did post the lawsuit itself, which is fairly long, and I didn't have time to go through it all. It talks about TB testing, intake testing, sobering cells, safety cells, staffing plans, mental and dental health plans, anti-violence plans. All these plans are supposed to be ready by, I think, July and finalized by October. But there's no indication that I've yet seen, maybe there is, I haven't been able to read through the whole thing yet, about funding that is going to be available for this. There is one thing that I noted, which seems to be positive, that I was particularly, you know, was able to pull something out of it, was more than just promises, is allowing continued medication for people who are currently on medication. This has been a real problem for a number of people in different kinds of arrests across the country, and I believe as well in the Santa Cruz County Jail, although my memory is hazy about that, about whether they are grossly negligent or directly abusive in stealing your medication and not letting you medicate. And I'm talking about both prescription medication and medical marijuana, which some people are now using to great effect. And of course, in a number of states, it's becoming legal and has been legal for a number of years. Santa Cruz, it's been de facto recognized as beneficial for two decades or more. But still, the police pretend and they play this drug war game, and the jails collude with that as well in a kind of a culture of cruelty, as I like to call it. Let's see. There's an anti-shock therapy protest coming up at the town clock. I read about it, and it was confirmed by Sarah Leonard of the MH Can group, which will be happening at 11 o'clock on Saturday at the town clock, about 5 hours before the Homeless Lives Matter protest at 4:30 at the Food Not Bombs meal. And it sounds like both those protests are interesting. Shock therapy, sending electricity through the brain, has acquired new respectability in some quarters recently, and it's not something I have at my fingertips now to describe in detail as far as what the Santa Cruz psychiatric authorities are doing in terms of how many people they're sending out for ECT. I think if people go to this particular protest at 11 o'clock on Saturday, and I may show up there, you can find out more information about it. You could also contact Sarah Leonard. She has a Facebook page. She may be able to advise you. I've suggested that she might want to come on the air and talk about it. She may do that. We'll see. And what else we got here? Here's a story from Venice, from Peggy Lee Kennedy. Should cops... Well, let's see here. Should cops be trained to deal with the mentally ill? This is another one of those pseudo solutions that suddenly that comes out of lawsuits, where police officers, the police departments, rather than fundamentally develop transparency, accountability, and community control, say they will train their officers better. And that becomes a way of reassuring the public, or, you know, buying off the people who are doing the million-dollar lawsuit for having their son shot to death or their daughter crippled in a car chase that was unnecessary. But it isn't. I wonder how much it really amounts to. It has a nice liberal ring to it when you say, well, you know, we're going to train the police to deal with people who are mentally ill. But The real issue is use of force, use of lethal force, use of restraining devices, and a requirement that other methods be used, and this paranoid super emphasis, this phony concern with officer safety instead of with community safety is breathtakingly broad. And becomes an excuse for every single police murder that comes down the road. I don't think I'm going to play this now. Like, a lot of this stuff is available online. I'm going to talk about it. I may talk about it more on Sunday. I want to remind you of the phone number to call in here if you've had some thoughts listening to this show, or if you've had some experiences that are in any way related to what I'm talking about. Call in at 427-3772, 427-3772. Let's go to Pacific Avenue and hear what they are saying and singing about.
Well, it's about 10 after 2 on May 10th, 2015. I'm downtown on a sunny afternoon on Pacific Avenue. There's a squad car double parked or parked in a non-parking lane. Three police officers looking like what looks could be Officer Azua from the back, detaining and writing a citation for an older guy, looks like Paul, on the sidewalk. So what's going on here, you know?
Oh, I mean, I got to be an asshole yelling at everyone, and now you got in trouble.
I got you. Thank you. So we're here on the corner of Cooper and Pacific. Oh, so Cal and Pacific. Hey, guy. So we have... Hey, Paul. I'm listening.
Citizen's arrest.
What's that?
Citizen, I don't know.
Okay.
Herco, can you sign a citation?
Are you going to be going somewhere?
I'm trying to go down there.
Officer Albert is giving him a citation to sign. We have two police officers and a security guard. One with all of them have sunglasses on, and one of them is chewing gum on Pacific Avenue. As a female officer, and and, of course, the officer I just mentioned.
Mr. Herko. You're free to go wherever you want. I just want you to calm down and quit cussing at people passing by, okay?
Good. And the officer tells Paul to quit cussing at people and stop bothering people walking by, and pours out a beverage, claiming it's an alcoholic beverage.
Four Loco, according to him.
What's that?
Four Loco.
I'm an alcoholic, dope fiend, motherfucking idiot. Polak.
And an angry man as well.
As Polish intelligence is not an oxymoron.
Agreed.
Here's my cab driver.
And Paul later showed me a citation. He was extremely angry, and the people surrounding that who were selling jewelry, I think the voice in the background with the drum is Isaac Collins, who's doing a street performance. I didn't talk to him about this incident, but others were pleased that the police came and confronted this person who apparently was very upset and angry. And later, I was sitting on a bench and still angry, but not being so overtly angry. The ticket he got was for smoking on Pacific Avenue. And I suppose the point was it was their pretext to contact him and tell him to, you know, calm down or we will cook up something else. And in a way, I think people were grateful for this kind of paternalistic approach. Maybe people didn't know how to handle somebody who was angry as they claim Paul was. And Paul did seem pretty pissed at different points, even later in the day. So, I gotta say, it's not always wrong that individuals come and try and calm down into another individual. In this situation, the community supported it. I'm talking about the counterculture community on the streets, or at least the vending community. And, yeah, I mean, I didn't survey everyone, but let's hear more from other incidents or other encounters on Pacific Avenue.
There's some drumming going on here. A man sitting on a skateboard next to Forever 21. Well, we have Isaac. Isaac Collins doing a rap, selling his patches, towels. So how much are these patches here, Isaac?
$5. 2 for $10.
And what do I do? Is this a towel sort of thing?
Okay, wipe it off, wipe your face.
I see. Well, I will purchase one, but only because it's blessed by a certain poet I know.
It is blessed by me.
Assuming I have $5, that is.
You got a 20, right?
I do have a 20. Do you have change for a 20?
I do.
Excellent. Let me give you a 20. One of the passes.
So I give you what?
Got one.
And we're doing a negotiation here. You're hearing it on the radio, folks.
Yeah, they're both
man.
All day, man.
What are you?
Actually,
you purchasing something?
You, why not?
What's your? Here, I'll do 10. Get two of them.
I just want one.
One?
Not
right.
Two.
I have long, long nose here. Shit, 5 for $20. Five for $20.
There you go. I'll give you 10.
That sounds good.
There you go.
You're a bad man.
That works.
You got 15.
Shut
up. That gives me 20. You get 5 back.
There you go. And then bang.
All right. I want my towel.
Here you go.
I'm taking my towel with me, by crap.
Get your towel.
Yeah.
I mean, so, any reports from the downtown from anybody? Isaac, anybody else?
It's been good, you know.
Happy Mother's Day. How about that?
Happy Mother's Day.
That's my report.
Welcome to the Mother's Day.
Happy Hallmark card day. No, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, this is bullshit, man. Anyway, we have...
Write your own, mom, your own Mother's Day card.
Mothers are good. But
Mother, great.
Mother's Day sucks.
I made my mom a Mother's Day card. It was the best gift I ever gave her.
Good for you, man.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, you should do that every day or any other day, but just because they tell you it's Mother's Day, I mean,
you're
come
right,
on.
You're right. You're right.
Bullshit.
Yes,
but thank you.
Mother's Day is every day, as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. It is every day. That's why I'm out here showing love to mothers.
Of course.
Every day. I've been showing
Not to mention Father's Day, Children's Day, Baby's Day.
Every day is everybody's day, man.
Every day. That's not being a day.
Every day is everybody's day, man.
And we've been talking with...
That's what I say. Oh, it depends on who you ask.
What would you call?
What's my name? What's my name?
Give me a name. Give me a name.
Pages.
Thank you.
I call myself Pages.
Thank you, Pages.
That's my pen name.
And Isaac.
You need to tell the house.
Thank you, Paige.
I'll give you this one. You're welcome. Dirty.
So what's been happening downtown?
I'm passing through. I've only been here a week.
Your name is?
Train Hulbert from Long Beach, California.
And Train, what's your week's experience here? What have you noticed?
It has been a very eclectic experience. I've met a lot of nice people. The town really just seems to be full of a town of people going places but never really getting there.
Question is, what places are they going or trying to go to as well?
They're trying to go to other countries. They're trying to go north. They're trying to go to other states. But a lot of people seem to get stuck right here.
Maybe they don't have the money to go anywhere.
But you know what? You're right. But there's a lot of money and talent here in the downtown area.
In the pockets of a few.
In the pockets of a few, they need to be spread out to the rest of the 99, if that's what you're getting at.
Oh, for sure. But also, I know if you were sitting on a skateboard next to the building, which is not illegal.
Not illegal
at all. It's only illegal to sit on the ground next to a building. They're trying to protect the ground from you, you see.
You know that. I don't know. I don't know whether that's eminent domain or what.
Eminent stupidity is what that is.
Stupidity is eminent if you're only using less than...
check to the police to go after you. If they don't like your looks, is what it is.
Well, in that case, then I got a pocket full of checks for them. Shit.
Any hassles with the police since you've been here, Mr. Black Skin Guy?
Too many. To be actually honest, no. I haven't had any hassles, but they have been stereotypical, very classist.
Show me about that, how that works.
They see you, if they see you with a... Now, I am indeed, I'm not homeless, but I do not have a roof over my head because I am traveling. But if they see you with either a backpack that seems to be too large and not carrying school books, then you are automatically put in a certain category.
And how do you know that in terms of what you've seen in Santa Cruz?
I know it and seen it because it has happened to me. I have seen them literally talk to another person in a certain way with a person who's standing right next to them.
So describe this incident when it last happened to you.
About 2 days ago, I was... What is the next street over?
That's Cedar Street.
I was on Cedar Street right by the farmer's market. And my sister, who was sitting wrapping stones with another lady who was actually kind of visibly homeless, had long dreads and her dog. My sister and her were sitting on inside of a planter. No crowd. No anything, just the two of them. An officer was supposedly called, two of them came up and was speaking to her as I was walking up. They had asked her to leave, and they spoke to my sister specifically and said, we've gotten calls, and we don't want you to gather. And she's all like, gather? It's me and my friend. And she's all like, well, we're not talking about you, ma'am, which means she was insinuating the visibly homeless person over there.
Now, your companion is a white-skinned person?
My companion is a black lady. She's my sister, my literal blood sister.
Oh, so this was...
But the other
class,
lady
not
was
race.
Oh, no, not racism at all. Strictly class. Mm-hmm. If you're poor, you're poor. Green, white, yellow, blue, yellow, purple, or turquoise. You're still poor.
But if you're poor and black, you're really out of luck.
Twice under the ball.
And if you're poor, black, and a woman, good luck!
Women's suffrage wasn't until later.
And don't try to be gay about it, okay?
I'm not trying. I'm very happy.
I mean, gay. So, any other thoughts?
I love this city. It has a lot to offer. Peace, love, and soul.
Here's a card which tells you when your comments will be on the air. And actually, they're archived, so you can find them later.
All right. What's your name?
I'm Robert, and it's on the card.
Robert,
you need
Train.
To reach me? Train, thank you, Train.
Hold on a second. Let me give you my card. I am a traveling musician.
Excellent.
On my way to Europe to go see my daughter.
And your kind of music is?
I do a little bit of everything. Honestly.
And your website is?
My website, actually I don't have a website, but my Facebook, Train, H-U-L-B, at Facebook. You can't check out my music there for about another month or so. I'm still recording.
And again, we've been talking with...
Train Hulbert, Long Beach, California.
And choo-choo to you, sir.
Thank you very much. Have a good day to you.
You too, man.
Appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you.
Watch out! Oh, sorry.
So I may be having an interview with Uncle Paul here, who we just heard he's shaking his head now. He's out of it. But I do have a citation he showed me. It's for, what, smoking on Pacific Avenue? Have you been smoking again? Oh, for heaven's
just
sake.
Just like the college girls. I smoked a cigarette. Got a ticket. They did, but I got a ticket.
Now we have a competing First Amendment activity versus musical. That's I guess you get your choice of either. Paul did indeed get a ticket a few minutes ago for smoking. My condolences, Paul. I don't want it. But I know you don't either. And now you've tossed it away. Anything else you want to say before we move on? Thank you.
I'm a dumb pole.
I don't know about that. And here's the other side of the story.
Go to a party.
Debbie will turn to see this beautiful lady that's putting up with me. And then she asked me, do I feel alright? And I said, yes.
Get lost, bitch.
I feel wonderful because I can see the love light in your eyes. And the wonder of it all is you just don't realize how much I love you. How much love you
is. Love songs on Pacific Avenue.
How much.
Oh, Paul is in an angry mood, and he threw away the smoking ticket. Somebody else came and gave it back to him, and then he angrily crumpled up and said, this is none of your fucking business, and the guy got angry. The two of them got into a dispute. Paul picked it up and threw the ticket in the wastebasket. And my thought about that whole thing is, for some people, it is not a pleasant and happy day on Pacific Avenue, in spite of the friendly veneer of the kind of overrides, overlays it all. Instead, it's, there are jewelers with jewelry displays, some of which are even too big to be in the bracketed area. There are painting displays that are.
And again, a lot of emphasis on this Paul case. Paul isn't usually that angry. He's been seeming angrier lately. I've seen him around a lot. He's a guy who has triplets as sons, identical triplets. Interesting. I met them all. That was a while ago. But his getting a smoking ticket when others are doing the same thing and not getting it because of your class may have set him off, and that may have. His angry comments may have disturbed the nearby scare away the customers mentality of some of the street artists and so forth and street jewelers. I'm just speculating as to what happened. I don't know. But let's continue.
Too big to be in the bracketed area. And there are people looking around, and one might even say more so than prior to the bracketed areas. Maybe because it gives a sort of an illusion of maybe even partial substance to there being a norm down here. Can I get you some popcorn, sir?
Please.
What kind of popcorn do you want?
Any popcorn will do.
I'm going to have to break into the theater to do it.
No, popcorn was.
So we're about to hear the music of
Ariana Glitt.
And Ariana, you are playing a
ukulele.
And you've been doing this for how long?
6 years.
And how long have you been out on the streets busking?
Probably like a year.
Okay, right now you're sitting in front of the Cooper House Mall. in an illegal spot, and I still like it that you're doing it, so go ahead.
Why won't you meet me halfway? Now I'm going to leave. This time I won't come back. You told me I had holes through my brain. I didn't know what to say. I get so tired of being sorry. I was waiting for something when nothing changed. Then I realized that if I wanted change, I'd have to do it myself. 'Cause no one else will. And believe me, I'm still making my dreams come true. Now I'm trying to be more happy, so much harder than it seems. when you're stuck living in a bubble and everyone's just so damn willing to pretend they're all about peace and love when it's really all about money. Now I can't believe that I am here again. Do I have the strength to be independent? All I really need is to find my direction, along with a little motivation. I'll do it myself. No one else will. And believe me, I'm still making my dreams come true. I'm sitting in my strange new life. I'm wondering if I had made the right choice. And then I thought of your face, and I knew my one mistake was thinking of going back. Before, I was so caught up in waiting, I didn't realize I could do it, I could change. It took some time, then I finally realized that I could do it myself. No one else would help. And believe me, I'm still making my dreams come true.
And the name of that song is?
It doesn't have a name.
A song without a name. And the name of the singer is?
Ariana Glett.
For the second time. Ariana, anything you want to say to your many potential fans out there?
Do it yourself.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Are you got a website, or you do any CDs, or no. When should we expect your first video?
I don't know. I'm not on social media.
But you're on the street.
But I'm on the street.
Are you houseless?
No, I have a home.
Are you local?
I'm from Humboldt, but I moved to Santa Cruz.
Are you paying a high rent?
Yes.
How much is the rent?
$750 per month.
Alone or with other people?
I'm paying $750 for a room in a house with other people.
Shared bath?
My own bathroom, kind of shared halfway.
Centrally located?
Kind of.
Anything else you want to say about what you've seen in Santa Cruz, how they've treated you on the street?
People are generally really nice, and Santa Cruz is great.
How about the police? How have they been treating you?
The police, I haven't seen any today, so it's good. I don't know.
Your friends, the police, you don't want to see them?
I don't want to see them.
How about the hosts, those fine fellows with the yellow jackets?
The hosts, I don't want to see them either.
And what about those great security guards who march up and down?
Security guards, they tell me not to skate. I love skateboarding.
I see. So you are not entirely happy with the...
authorities? Never.
Anything you want to add?
Nope.
And finally, again, we've been talking with...
Ariana.
Thanks, Ariana.
No problem.
And,
I'm here at the Art is the Universal Language. I speak it fluently. Jeff Jones Art Display, or Joff Jones, I should say. We've got chickens, we've got guys in gas masks, got Santa Claus with spectacles, we've got wolves, we've got all kinds of things here at this display, which is larger than the blue enclosed area, and it's also within 14 feet of a bench. Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
So it looks like there's a liberality here. And for those who are new to Santa Cruz or to this show, it is illegal to set up a small table or anything that's capable of holding tangible things. It could be a cap, it could be a guitar case that's open, unless you are inside one of the Lane Comstock bracketed areas, blue, yellow, or red. If it's one color, it means you can perform there, but you can't engage in free speech activities, or actually, you can perform or engage in free speech activities, but you can't vend. The other one is you can vend, but you can't perform. And the third is you can do both. But apparently you can't sit. Police will drive you away if you're just sitting there and doing nothing. At least that's what one woman experienced that she talked about at the library last Friday when we were there.
And, of course, it's also illegal to sit within everywhere along Pacific Avenue sidewalks. That's the main thoroughfare of downtown Santa Cruz. Unless you are on the 1% of the sidewalk that is 14 feet away from benches, kiosks, intersections, buildings, fences, directory signs, art sculptures, and a variety of other items, recycling containers, trash containers, something, a creation of laws that has fundamentally taken away the right to rest in Santa Cruz. That's another issue that the Homeless Lives Matter will be bringing up on Saturday at the protest, is our own need for a right to rest law in Santa Cruz, a local right to rest law, or at least an understanding in the community about what our rights are, even if the police and the city council and the businesses choose to ignore them or attempt to violate them with regularity and get us to agree to those violations as some sort of standard situation, which is the really frightening thing about all these laws, that they're being accepted just like NSA surveillance, being accepted just like foreign drone wars and death lists are being accepted, just as continued nuclear escalation is being accepted. All the things that move us all closer to destruction or immiserate and impoverish the middle class and those who are below the middle class continues to get worse and worse, and it's becoming something you just have to accept as a standard process, and the police are the guardians of this setup, or the guards, if you will, of this setup. I think it's time for another musical break. If you want to call in, you can. 427-3772, 427-3772 is the call-in number.
Through the ends of time, there's been a bright light shine. It's called mystery's got no reason, no rhyme. It may the warm sun arise and may the horse run fast. It may the dying man crawl to the very last. Bright light shining, and all those twisted ladders sing. People say and think about you hardly mean a thing. The bright light shine on, and on and on. Darkness that blinds. It's called prejudice, got no reason, no rhyme. It make the muses dumb, it make the children cry. It make the hothead man swear now it's eye for eye. Crack house to the concentration camp. To that nightmare place that people live. It's always cold and damp. Bright light shine on.
Back with Which Way LA? Ferguson, Missouri, Cleveland, Ohio, North Charleston, South Carolina, New York City, and Baltimore, Maryland are on a growing list of cities where unarmed African Americans have died at the hands of local police. That list now includes Venice Beach, California, where Brendan Glenn was killed last Tuesday in an incident that's been publicly questioned by LAPD Chief Charlie Beck. Here's the response of one Venice resident, Peggy Lee Kennedy, at a vigil held over the weekend.
Remove the police as a response to homelessness. It's insane. And the only money that they actually really spend in the city on homelessness, the only substantial money that they spend, is through the LAPD. Now, that is a crime.
We asked the LAPD to appear on our program. They declined. Mike Bonin is the first-term city councilman whose district includes Venice Beach. Welcome, as always.
Glad to be here.
What do you say to that resident who says, remove the police? This is insane, the only response.
Well, I agree. I think it's a problem for, I agree to this extent, that it's a problem for both LAPD and for civilians, for people who are unhoused and people who are housed, that our first response to homelessness should not be LAPD. It should not be law enforcement. It should be services. It should be housing. And we need to dramatically re-steer cities' focus and funding in that direction. Although I think it is important to note that, you know, LAPD was not responding in this case to a call about homelessness. They were responding to a disturbance call. It clearly went horribly wrong, but this is still something where a police officer would have rolled out in response to the call.
We heard earlier from a vigil over the past weekend in Venice Beach. Here is Michael Lindley, who volunteers with Venice's homeless population. He was speaking at last Thursday night's town hall meeting.
We don't want a police officer in the car. We want a professional mental illness person in that car who understands what the problem really is.
So, Mike Bonin, back to you. What about the preparation of the police? How well trained are they to respond, whatever the call or whoever the call may have come from, when they find a kind of situation where somebody has mental illness?
Well, important to note, just to be fair on this one, that nobody has suggested that Brendan Glenn was suffering from mental illness. I just think it's important in his memory to note that. But the question of LAPD's response to homelessness and to mental illness is a very important one. LAPD has a nationally recognized model that other departments across the country follow in terms of having a mental evaluation unit and having these SMART teams. Unfortunately, the department's funding for it is so small that it's really confined to a very small number of officers, a very small unit, and is more or less confined to Skid Row or to downtown. It needs to be expanded dramatically, and it's going to take a couple different things to do it. I've been talking with both Chief Beck and with Supervisor Sheila Kuehl about the component pieces we need to do it.
Yeah, and I'm getting a little tired of this. If it's about a murder by police or a tragic accident, if the police chief wants to put it that way, that has nothing to do with mental illness, why are they shifting the focus? And again, the notion that people are homeless and that immediately brings up the labels, oh, mentally ill, oh, alcoholic, oh, drug addict. No, a person who's unhoused and is in pretty wretched condition often, or is in more difficult, under greater strain, and particularly is sensitive having his rights being violated since it's probably being done on a regular basis, which, you know, can eventually cause a person's human dignity to snap back at that sort of thing, and properly should if a person isn't going to be turned into a domesticated poodle or simply, you know, die in a sort of a gelatinous mass on the street. The issue is not mental illness, but the idea of suddenly changing it to that rather than holding these officers who killed this guy accountable. And I haven't really talked about this case on the air. This is an email I got from Peggy Lee Kennedy, who's appeared on this show or spoken on this show by phone. She's an activist in Venice and Santa Monica with Food Not Bombs and the Justice Committee down there.
She writes, we never needed the LAPD as a partner. The comments about having to have the LAPD deal with disabled unhoused people on the streets fed into a stereotype that unhoused people are scary. I wonder if that is why we rarely see this. She actually sent me this kind of critique of this this audio I've been playing for you. And she corrects a number of misimpressions. I'm not going to play through the entire audio, which is relatively lengthy. But she notes that Rose Avenue in Venice was not a rundown street. It used to be a working-class neighborhood street with a family-run cafe, a family market, a homeless center, the largest free medical clinic in Southern California, which is still there, and a large bakery that four generations of my family bought bread from. This is the highest-paid city council in the country in L.A., she notes. Extreme gentrification is directly contributing to what is happening in Venice. And in Santa Cruz, I was talking to a worker in the dental office today who told me about her about the Grand Avenue Park, and I've noticed it too and heard this from other people. I drove by. It's not just the homeless lack of services center that has a gate around it. Grand Avenue Park is now covered with a gate. I don't know if they're locking it and closing it at night. But the idea is, again, to treat those who are outside who don't fit into the middle-class comfort picture as aliens, menaces, nuisances, or at best problems that we have to let's shove them into housing first, let's put them in Janus programs, anything to get rid of them, instead of acknowledging, A, people may make different choices about where they want to go, and B, given the kind of pressures on people in the housing market, there's going to be lots and lots of people, and to ignore the basic issues and instead focus on the victims of the situation is, again, it's a form of distraction, just like the situation in Venice, where the case of, and let me get his name right, I guess it's Glenn Brandon, is that right? Brandon Glenn. And I may have talked about this before. I certainly was noticing it when I was running through this earlier. I think it was last week. Let's see if it's here. Let's see if we can find it here. You know, here's an article. LAPD kills unarmed Brandon Glenn at Venice Beach 7 days ago. This is CNN, so it's not going to be any great liberal or radical source. It's the LAPD now has called it justified, of course. However, he did say, the police chief did say, anytime an unarmed person is shot by an L.A. police officer, takes extraordinary circumstances to justify that. And he adds, I have not seen those extraordinary circumstances at this point, which, of course, doesn't mean that he's going to have those cops arrested or fired or anything of that sort, which, of course, would be the immediate situation, I would imagine, if these were not police officers. But again, there apparently was a videotape of the incident, but the police aren't releasing the videotape. The victim was identified as Brendan K. Glenn, 29, African-American, autopsy pending. He was described as homeless. Naji Ali, community activist and political director of the National Action Network, told reporters that the killing was another example of an unarmed African-American being shot and killed by police for no reason. Ali commended Beck, saying it's the first time he's heard such remarks from an L.A. police chief. We want that officer put in jail, Ali said, calling upon prosecutors to file charges against the officer who shot and killed the homeless man. Of course, probably what you need to do is, L.A. is a big place. In Santa Cruz, when we had an officer who was harassing women repeatedly, that was the now heroic reputation Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker, who back in 1992... 10 women testified that he was feeling them up in searches inappropriately. And, of course, this officer was mightily defended by the union. He was found not guilty of any crimes. And, more important, he was transferred laterally to a detective position. I'm not sure if that's a higher position, but it's certainly not a lower one, I don't think, in the police department. And then he was promoted and declared Officer of the Year. So Santa Cruz, this was 23 years ago that this happened. So, you know, that's none of that gets mentioned at the memorial services or at the city council or the brouhaha that's gone on over the last 2 years over the dead baker, the dead Butchie Baker, or Sticky Fingers Butchie, as I used to call him. So this continues to happen, and the issue for us in Santa Cruz is, what are we going to do about our police department to protect our citizenry and to essentially end the kind of fear that develops when police arrive, particularly around poor and homeless people who have very few choices and who are very vulnerable to this kind of stuff. That's the issue that I confront on this show, or don't confront, but talk about endlessly on this show. And we'll continue to talk about. And we hopefully will be talking about that on Saturday, if you come on down to the 4:30 protest at the Food Not Bombs meal, which is held at the main post office down in Santa Cruz. So consider coming in and checking it out. And let's hear some more from Pacific Avenue.
Here is picking up some paints. Joffa's his own business cards and his own work. No hassles from police?
Not so far. Generally, the police are pretty cool with what I'm doing here because I'm not causing any trouble or breaking any rules for the most part.
Well, you are outside the infamous blue. I'm not going to say a word about officer. Anyway, how long have you been out here today?
I've been out here since about 11 o'clock.
You've been told to move along every hour?
No. Generally, I post up for most of the day, and sometimes it pisses people off, and sometimes the cops will come over and say, hey, you know, this is a rule, and I acknowledge that, but I just simply just stay in the same
spot.
You've
got a lot of stuff here.
I don't come along and ask you guys, hey, would you like to switch up on either side of the planter here or something like that, but if no one's waiting for the spot, I think you should have it as long as you want, because everybody will get a spot that works for
them. How long have you been doing this job?
I've been drawing for my entire life. I've been painting since December of 2012. I just started selling art July 15th of last year.
Really, this suggests a new strategy that Joff Jones is suggesting, which is not so much outraged and angry protest when the police officer comes and tries to move you along, but say, yes, sir, and then ignore it. And apparently, if you're middle class looking enough or selling to enough middle class people, or if it's artwork you have there and you are not blocking the sidewalk, which people never are on Pacific Avenue, it's just that doesn't happen. Although police are going after others on the sidewalks for that, simply as a tool, they left those tools to clear them away. The strategy may be simply to ignore what a police officer says. I've always kind of, you know, used a more explicit strategy, you know, which is to say, you're violating the law, you're violating the Constitution, or not even to say that, but to act on that basis by saying, I'm going to continue what I'm doing, officer. You do what you need to do. I've got to do what I need to do. And then, of course, when I see it happening to other people, I usually become rather loud and vocal about it, because usually this involves a whole bunch of police officers, or a number of police officers, more than what you would think would be necessary. In a kind of a military-style approach, a number of squad cars lining up on the street and blocking a lane or so of traffic, all for a trivial thing. And the strategy may be a better one of simply ignoring this. And I'll have to check with him to see how successful he's been as time goes on.
Is
selling art, paying rent, paying bills, doing what I need to do to stay alive, just off of what you see here.
How long are you downtown here?
Usually I'm here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I've been doing this for about a year now.
Really?
So, yeah.
Pretty regularly every weekend?
Yes. Yes.
And what's your average take on the weekend, if you don't mind saying?
It'll vary. Sometimes there will be days where I'll only make like $40 to $60, and then some days I'll make anywhere from $100 to $400.
And your average time out here per day is?
Generally, I try to hit at least 6 to 8 hours.
And what have you found, what's been the most striking thing you remember about your work for the last year outside and your experience on the avenue?
Oh, man. Just something interesting. There's never a dull moment. When you're out here selling art, you'll see something crazy every single day, whether it's a dispute or whether it's someone dressed crazy or whether you're seeing a legend on the side of the street with an accordion. It's every day is new and fresh and unforgettable, really.
Anything happened today of note?
Today, well, we met a new street artist not too long ago. She has her stuff set up over here on wood planks. She's very, very sweet. Other than that, nothing too exciting for the most part. It's been a pretty standard day.
Any movement to organize street artists into a trade union so they support each other under other circumstances?
You know, we all kind of just support each other and try to make sure that we're all kind of in the same community with the same idea of getting our stuff out here. And as more and more of us come out here, they're kind of giving us more freedom and more rights to our display and just the rules. We've been flexing it slowly and slower over time, and it's been working as far as getting a little bit of ease off the tension and the rules. So,
is this the first city you've done this in?
I've sold in San Francisco at the Embarcadero. I sold in Berkeley. I've sold in San Luis Obispo, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande,
Santa Barbara.
But that's about as far as I've gone. As far as going north, San Francisco is the furthest.
Now, they haven't asked you for business licenses or anything of that kind?
I have had my name written down twice by police because I did not have a business license, but then I just kind of started reading up on my rights and amendments and stuff, and there's some key words that you can just tell them and they'll walk away because they can't do anything about it.
Those key words for your fellow artists are?
Definitely the freedom of speech through expression is definitely the most important amendment. You can get out here, you can fly whatever sign you want, you can show whatever picture you want. It's all freedom of expression, so they can't take that right away from us.
Last time they attempted to get a license from you was when?
About 6 months ago, and then street artists started pouring out onto the street, and we've been flexing the rules, and they've really eased off of us quite a bit.
Have you ever put prices on your work?
On display out on the street, no. I try to make it pretty flexible. If someone's walking up to me in a Giorgio Armani suit, I'm obviously going to charge them much more than I would charge someone that is just a Santa Cruz standard local. You know, I'm definitely working on a sliding scale.
And is this something you're doing because of that particular consideration, or is it you're afraid of the police saying, "Aha, a price tag. It's a business person."
Yeah, so...
I mean, in fact, you're allowed to put price tags on artwork. This looks like original artwork.
Yes.
These aren't reprints even, right?
Correct. Usually I do fly a sign, and it's usually just on this box. It says
$10 prints.
But I keep it covered only because I have been harassed before by the police. They say, hey, you know, if you're out here selling stuff, you have to go and get a permit from City Hall. But as I kind of started looking more and more into it and talking to other street artists that have gotten out of situations like that, it's really, if you know your amendments, you know your way.
You're talking about Santa Cruz specifically.
Yeah, yeah. Where I lived, it was a lot more tense to try to sell art.
That was?
San Luis Obispo. It's a very conservative, ritzy town. Not so much into the arts. They're kind of, it's more of a college party town and retirement town, really. But it's it's a lot harder to sell art in other places, that's for damn sure.
And we've been talking with?
Joff Jones.
Anything you want to add, Joff?
Art is a universal language, and as artists, we all need to come out here and speak the language that has been here longer than any other language on the face of the earth.
Thanks.
And I should mention that the bracket law, the law that has these colored areas, blue, red, and yellow, and that also has a couple of areas that are within, they're next to buildings, which is, of course, a better way for street performers to perform, but there are only like three or four of those spaces, maybe less, two or three. A couple of additional spaces were added to intersections. Some people are respecting the spaces, some people are ignoring them, and the police, I haven't received a lot of complaints from people regarding police citations. A few. There's one guy who got a citation from Julie Hendy of the, Public Works Department, or maybe she's been transferred to another department, Parks and Rec, perhaps. That she thought the art was not original art, and therefore she had made a citizen's arrest, and that, as I understand it, was it hasn't yet reached the courts, so that's another issue that may be coming up. The person who's gotten the most attention around not so much display devices, but his whole vehicle assemblage is a display device. That's his that's Curtis Relaford in his Follow Your Heart series of vehicles where he plays music and dances on top of his vehicle. And it's been my impression that Curtis is pretty reasonable in terms of lowering the volume of music when he's requested to do so. He's even gotten permits when he's gotten tickets. He's fought successfully a couple of tickets, but doesn't really fought them. I think he was able to get... Police didn't come to court in a number of cases. Most recently, he's pled, even though, as I understand it, Micah Posner and numerous supporters went to court with him. And I found that was too bad. I think it, well, you know, everybody has their own approach to this. People have their own lives to live. Some people are not fascinated with the prospect of spending hours preparing for court cases. They don't have the time, they don't have the energy, they don't have the interest, and I can understand that as well. The real issue for us is how do we civilize an occupying, armed, and dangerous force of individuals, a gang of people in blue who are funded to make decisions about the lives of the community that they have no right making, and that have nothing to do with public safety, and that are backed up by lethal force. I mean, that's really the issue for us. And I've suggested one way to do that is by demanding they be more transparent so we can see exactly when they pull their guns, when they threaten to pull their guns, when they tase, when they do pain compliance holds. And I have not been able to get anything other than the most sketchy information on that. There's a whole series of concerns I've raised, which I can't get local organizations interested in, or they have not yet picked up the cry, but I'll keep crying, and maybe some of you folks will too. Let's see who's calling in. You are on Free Radio with Robert. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. This is Paul from Santa Cruz.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Good. I was just hearing you talk about Curtis, and you know, he's one of the nicest guys I've ever met on the whole planet.
I like him.
I mean, he's a very unifying kind of personality.
He's a sweet guy. He is African American. We got to, you know, in Santa Cruz, that can be a drawback, as you know.
Yeah, especially with that enormous vehicle. You're not supposed to have that big vehicle when you're a black guy.
Yeah, I mean, you got to know your place in our white society.
Yeah, and he's got it plastered with all this great imagery of wordings on the side of it and pictures. Inspiring things like a real work of art.
Yeah, you can see his vehicles. Sometimes they're parked downtown. Did you get to his court case that happened more recently when he went to the Department 10 in the basement of the county building?
No, I have heard about his problems, though, with getting permits and still getting ticketed or told to shut up. I didn't go to the court case, but I just can't stand, can't wear a hat in the court, and I refuse to take my Indian hat off my head because it's symbolic of America. It's a freedom of expression issue. If you can't even dress the way you are, then that means you have no freedom.
For sure, for sure.
So the key is this country is a fascist country. And the problem is Americans are going to wake up to see that when they haven't been getting pay increases for the last 30 years, it's been flat, the wages for people. We're working typical blue-collar jobs, et cetera, for 30 years. And how are people supposed to expand and even get to own a house when they can't expand on the economic stage because the people that have money aren't giving them enough money?
Well, not even to own a house. How about being able to rent a place to sleep in? You know, I mean, in Santa Cruz.
Even, even in Santa Cruz, of course. Yeah, Santa Cruz is out of the question to own a house. I mean, on a typical job, there's not even a question.
Yeah, but I mean, rentals in Santa Cruz and in San Francisco are, you know, some of the highest in the country and increasing and escalating, not necessarily escalating, but yeah, I think they are escalating.
Yeah, $2,500 for one bedroom or, yeah, one bedroom in San Francisco.
I mean,
$2,500.
It even makes the headlines of the Urinal, which is to say the newspaper, where they call themselves the Sentinel. And, you know, it's there, it's real. I tenant organizers who wanted to bring tenants together, I got an email from one the other day, are just discouraged because people, maybe they're too busy looking for housing or avoiding the police and ducking into places to sleep. I know the Red Church, Father Joel, has been apparently sending in the police to ticket people.
Yeah, you know, the church has to be really a big-hearted example of what humanity can be when we reach out to help the less fortunate, because that's really why the church was established, basically, to show by example the humane interactions that we're supposed to exemplify to encourage the Christ-like awareness that happens when people are kind to each other.
Could be. I mean, I wasn't around in, you know, when the, you know, the Christian church was established. A lot of religions are simply a way of, you know, they're kind of social groups. Have you had any experiences on the street that you want to pass on to folks listening recently?
I haven't seen any real negative stuff on the street. Actually, I've had a lot of good interactions with people that are on the walking path, and a lot of friendliness and not any caustic energy from anyone. Just people saying it's a very nice day and things like that. Very positive things from people. So I'm feeling good about things in Santa Cruz. I don't feel a lot of animosity on the street.
Well, that's good. And do you want to say who you are, or do you want to remain anonymous?
Oh, no, I'll say who I am.
Who are you?
My name is Paul.
That's right. You actually introduced yourself at the beginning of the call. So.
Yeah, Paul from Santa Cruz, and I've been here for like 30 years. I'm playing music right now. My brother and I are on the road to going over to England. We have a CD we put out, Greg Chansky and my brother and myself, and it's all original music, and it's very English-like, Beatley, but psychedelic, like Pink Floyd, and I think it can work pretty good over there. America just is dead as far as supporting music economically. I mean, you can get some gigs, you just can't make a living. It's pretty destitute. It's really difficult. It's not because the people that have the club don't want to hire people. It's just that you can get so few gigs on a regular basis to keep any steady income coming in that if you don't have a benefactor or a supporter, you really get on the skids. It's not easy at all.
Well, Paul, thank you. And if you want to, you know, have us play some of your music, bring it around, or get it to me, and I'll put it on the air.
I sure will, man. I'll get that to you.
All right. Give me
a
call.
And have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Okay. And we're getting close to Uncle Dennis time. A couple of newspaper articles caught my interest. There's an article Monday, and the headlines of the San Francisco Chronicle say, "Focus on Police Pays Off. Citizen complaints drop with use of wearable cameras." In Oakland, deploying wearable cameras by the police, use of force incidents in the 400,000 member population city of Oakland have plunged 72%, according to department records. With 700 body cameras, Oakland is the biggest inventory in the nation. That, you know, that sounds like good news initially when you read it, and it's The question becomes, though, there are other reasons. Oakland Police Force has been vastly cut back. The Oakland has been under serious federal scrutiny. And, of course, we were notorious for how they treated the Occupy movement 3 years ago or 4 years ago. Yeah, it's almost four, 3.5 years ago. And, again, who controls the cameras really becomes the issue. So, for example, in some recent killings, and I don't remember which one it was, there are so many in the last few months of unarmed black Americans and some white Americans, too. Police can turn off their cameras before they go into incidents, or they suddenly find their cameras weren't working, and or the camera material is not revealed to the public, as seemed to be the case with this unarmed homeless man in Los Angeles who was killed by police, Brandon Glenn. So that's an issue. It's really important to try to go as deeply as you can into issues when people who are calling for reform, who are liberals, aren't really calling for very deep reform. They may be politically ambitious, and they may want to ride an issue to power. They may be very principled at the same time, in the sense that they may believe that they're trying to do all that is possible at the time. But if what's being proposed doesn't fundamentally change things, but provides an excuse and a cover for continuing the same system, then that's not something you want to support. Even if it, you know, oh, let's have a police review board. You know, I mean, that's been a claim of, for example, Steve Plaich, who had that claim, although I think he's modified it in recent months. Steve comes out with a plan every month, and he writes about it in Street Spirit. There'll be another issue of Street Spirit available soon. I'm sorry I haven't gotten the most recent one into the library or actually onto the streets. I've been letting myself be occupied with other things. We may be going to get some tomorrow, so maybe we'll have some Street Spirits. Usually you can get those at the Sub Rosa. But police reform has to be at a deep level, and there are some people, of course, who believe, and I'm tempted to this position myself, that the very existence of the police generally is not just problematic, that's a little too gentle a word, but is coercive and dangerous to the community in terms of who they really serve, what interests are served, whether the real issues that they claim to be